PRN, Pause, Renew, Next, a podcast about soul care, scripture, and stories of faith. I'm Jenny Detweiler, and friends, I'm so glad today to bring you the first guest interview of 2025. It was a joy to have my colleague, Josh Howlett, on the podcast to talk about cultivating joy. We've spent the last few weeks talking about lots of different hard emotions, and so it's fun to spend a little bit of time thinking about joy, which is just as important as all the other emotions we've talked about thus far. Josh is a licensed clinical mental health counselor, but before he was a counselor, he was in pastoral ministry. In this episode, we talk about all kinds of things, including how he went from being a pastor to a licensed counselor. We also talk about the importance of movement for mental health, as well as a lot of the things that Josh has learned as a marriage counselor. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I think that you're going to too. So without further ado, let's jump into the conversation. Well, Josh, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited you're here. Do you want to tell everybody a little bit about yourself? Just whatever you want people to know.
Okay. Yeah, Josh, and I am, I'm a counselor. I work with Jenny at the Counseling Center at Cornerstone, and love doing that. Love being a counselor. I'm former pastor as well, and made that transition into counseling. I'm a dad. I've been married to my wife, Jenny, for about 18 years. We were trying to do the math the other day to figure out how long we've been married. And so I started to ask Alexa, I'm like, hey, Alexa, like, how long has it been since 2007? I think I got 2007 right. And my wife's like, stop. She wanted to do it in her head. And so she came up with 18 years. And then after that, I asked Alexa and she got it right. So anyhow.
Job, Alexa.
Yeah. So been married 18 years to my wife, Jenny. And we have three kids, Jayla, Jace, and Jackson, and super fun kids. We love them. Yeah, we like to play a lot and do things like that. So it's a little about me. And yeah, thanks for inviting me on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're here. Josh, you had just mentioned that you used to do pastoral work and then you got into counseling. You want to talk a little bit about, I mean, the whole thing, like how you got into ministry to begin with, how you ended up switching from pastoral to counseling. Like, I think all that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, just kind of on the transitioning from, you know, pastoral ministry to counseling, I really enjoyed pastoral ministry. Pastoral ministry is a lot of teaching, you know, preaching, generating information. It's organizing. These days it's become highly administrative. And I remember I was at a marriage conference actually, and I met a pastor there, and I was talking with him, and he had been in ministry for about 40 years. And I said, man, you don't hear that often. Like how did you stay in ministry that long? And he says, well, I just love caring for people. And I looked at him and I said, well, when do you get to do that? And I was serious because the role I was in was administrative, you know, planning a lot of events and doing a lot of different things. And I think I just wanted to be with people more. And counseling definitely gives that opportunity. You know, there was one event that kind of sticks out in my mind that was kind of a transitional, you know, or at least affirming story at the time. And I was talking with a dad who had just lost his 20-year-old son to cancer. And I remember I was out, you know, I think I was shopping at Walmart, and I'm on the phone with him, and we're talking. And it just hit me at that time. It was late at night. You know, it hit me. I'm like, I'm not watching the clock. I'm right where I want to be. You know, I'm right where I feel like I'm supposed to be, helping this person in this hard place. And so I've tried to move towards that. And I feel like God has really affirmed kind of that step towards counseling and that more care and encouragement type ministry, away from the more administrative, you know, programming or teaching. I don't think those are my primary gifts.
So you found counseling, were you already looking for that, or you went back to school? Like, how did that part come about?
Yeah. So I went back to school. I did kind of a hybrid program through Colorado Christian where you would go on campus. I thought about it. You know, I looked at a couple of different schools and then I thought, well, hold on. If I have a hybrid program in Colorado, that means I get to go to Colorado, you know, every so often. And it was slightly cheaper than some of the other schools. So that factored in too. Some of the people I really looked up to, like John Eldridge and Larry Crabb, those guys, Dan Allender, came out of that program. And now Mike and Judy Stewart, you know, I didn't even know at the time that they went there, but the directors of our counseling center, they went to class with all those guys. So kind of a cool place to go. So went to Colorado Christian and really enjoyed the program.
Very cool. So I know that you see different populations, but you're kind of known for doing marriage counseling. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say marriage counseling, I don't hear has the best rap among counselors. Like a lot of counselors try it and are like, not for me. And yeah, it seems to be a really good fit for you. And so I'm curious, like, what do you like about sitting with couples? Not that I don't like sitting with couples, let's be clear. But like, it's a really good fit for you. Tell me about that and how you fell into that.
Well, so when I was young, I was diagnosed with ADHD. And I'll say marriage counseling, there's enough going on in the room that I'm actually interested, you know? So there's like shoes flying across the room and like, you know, like high emotions and it feels tense. And it almost feels like when I go mountain biking, you know? And so I'm like, this is, yeah, like a little adrenaline. Okay. I'm kidding. It's not that bad. You know, it has been, you know, tense at times. I'm kidding, obviously, but yeah, it's, there's a lot going on in the room sometimes. And, you know, I'll say I enjoy it because I love helping people understand each other better. I agree that it is weightier at times, you know, it's weightier than when I'm just sitting with someone, you know, maybe who's going through a job transition or, you know, we're just working on some kind of baseline anxiety or, you know, some other issues, right? But it's enjoyable to see people begin to understand one another and to begin to treat each other in a more kind way that really honors God and celebrates the other person. So
that's awesome. So I'm curious what kind of lessons that you've pulled away from that or like things that you've learned along the way with navigating all that.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a statistic that is very fascinating and, you know, kind of it'll change the way that you have conversations from here on out. 95% of conversations end the way they begin. 95% of conversations end the way they begin. So if you have a harsh startup, you get a harsh response. If you have a gentle startup, you'll have a gentle response. Okay. If I walk into the house and, you know, I say to my wife, I'm like, hey, like, what's the deal? Why are we having ground turkey again? Okay. And like, you know, what kind of response, Jenny, if your husband walked in and said something like that, how would you respond?
Defensively. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But if I walk in the house, I say, sweetheart, any chance like we could like do chicken instead of ground turkey, like for dinner. And she says gently back, anytime you'd like to cook chicken instead of ground turkey, you can. Okay. So that leads me to the second statistic. It's that 67% of marital conflicts are not resolvable. Okay. So in that example that I just gave there,
that's high. Yeah, that's really high.
Really high. Like it wasn't resolved. We're still having turkey instead of chicken, right? Unless I cook it. But she was really kind in how she responded back to me, primarily because I started with gentleness, right? So still not resolved.
That is a tough pill to swallow. Isn't it feel that way to you? It does to me. I knew that there were some. Yeah. I don't think I knew it was 67%. Tell me this. Are you getting this from John Gottman or somebody else? Where'd you get that?
I'm getting it from Gottman. Yeah. Yeah, that is. It's tough.
So thinking about like that from a rupture and repair standpoint, which I just talked about on my podcast.
I just heard that podcast.
So we're talking about ruptures that happen.
Yep.
But repair work doesn't always mean that we have to necessarily fix it. But it does mean we're still attuned to one another. And that's kind of what you're talking about. Like, maybe I don't get exactly what I wanted, but my husband is still treating me with respect.
Yep.
And if he wants to cook the chicken, then I guess he can do that.
That's right. Later. That's exactly right. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, you look at the difference in the way, you know, people act on social media now compared to maybe the way they interacted 30 years ago. You know, there's this, you know, disrespect, there's this harshness to it. People used to have a better way of dialoguing. And I think that's the difference. You're still going to disagree about the same amount of things, but it's how you treat each other along the way.
It's a good word, Josh. We need to give you a tip bucket or something like,
hey,
that was good.
I'll see what I can find around here.
So, you know, in the last little bit, like since Christmas, I've been talking on the podcast about kind of some hard emotions that get bad raps, especially in the faith community, I feel like. So now I want to give some weight also to the ones we think of as positive, you know, that we don't tend to talk as much about in counseling, I feel like, because we're always sort of problem solving and people come in crisis and we're not always talking about the fun stuff as much as maybe we would want to. But you are like the joy guy, I feel like. Like Enneagram 7, like smiley, positive energy, like everywhere you go, people feel good. So I know that you revel in joy. Can you tell me, like, how do you define joy? What do you think about that?
Well, hey, that's nice of you. And I think, you know, we can tend to be, you know, joyful in some settings and not in others, you know. And, you know, work can sometimes be easier than home. You know, I like to have a lot of fun at home, too. We have a very joyful home. But I don't think, you know, joy comes easy for anyone, really, you know, and especially these days with how busy and, you know, how many things we all have going on. I think for me, the one verse that I always lean on is that Psalm 16:11, where it says, "You will make known to me the path of life, and in your presence there's fullness of joy." You know, joy to me is the emotion I feel when I'm on God's path, in God's presence, experiencing God's pleasure. Kind of break that down. The book Happier, it's a really cool book. I listen to that, I listen to audiobooks. He talks a lot about, you know, this idea of purpose, right? So
who's the
author? I forget the author's name. It might be Harris. Bright yellow book called Happier. He says happiness is kind of this combination of purpose and pleasure. Okay. You can have too much purpose and not enough pleasure, or be all pleasure and not have enough purpose. Psalm 16:11 kind of ties that into this idea, you know, ties it all together well for me of, do I have enough purpose in my life? Do I have enough pleasure? Is God present in my purpose and pleasure? When all three of those things are going, I think I experience joy. What do you think about that, Jenny?
I love that definition. I have never heard that before, but I think that that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, as a counselor, I mean, I don't have like a number of how many people have told me this, but I feel like, and you probably hear this a lot in marriage counseling too, I hear a lot of people say like, I just want to be happy. Like, I just want to be happy. Like, what does that mean? I mean, that's kind of ephemeral. Like, what does that mean? Yeah. And then I think joy is kind of like the Christian version that we use sometimes to talk about, I want to be happy.
Yeah.
And kind of hard to name. And I think the way that you just defined it makes so much sense, because the Bible talks so much about joy, and we know that there's joy in God's presence, but I've never thought about the purpose part along with the pleasure part. And I think maybe our culture wants to focus on the pleasure part and not so much the purpose part or something
or
like
presence.
That.
Yeah. Or they want purpose. You know, you see everybody kind of doing their cool, you know, Instagram workouts or whatever, like the challenging thing. They want the purpose, you know, they want the pleasure, the materialism, all that, you know, and they'll take it all without God. And it's like,
That's right.
It's not enough. It is not enough. And you see it in, you know, all the public figures, the Tom Brady's who won another ring, you know, the people who never have enough. It's not enough. But when God's in it and he gives it, it's like, woo, this feels great. It's like, I have things that I've always wanted. And he's saying, enjoy it.
Yeah, that's so good. And what's coming to my mind is, see, I probably should look this up before I paraphrase badly. I think it's Psalm 90, and it's the last verse, and it says something like, bless the work of my hands, Lord, bless the work of my hands, or something like that. And I think about that because we have purpose, and when we're really driven about something, there is a lot of like joy that comes with it, you know? Like if you have a fire in your belly about something, there is a lot of the joy that comes with it, but like the Lord is what gives that to us, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
I'm trying to remember who wrote that psalm.
Mm.
I don't know. But I feel like there's Moses' name is in there somewhere. But I just think about that. Like the psalmist was saying,
let's just say
to you, Lord, but bless the work.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think it was Moses. So
I'm going to be so off.
It was probably Moses, you know, like, so he was a good writer.
Or maybe it talks about Moses. I don't know. Moses is in there somewhere. I have to go back and read it later.
Yeah, Psalm 90. So
I think so. Cool. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you had also asked, like, what are some of the ways that you can cultivate joy?
Yes.
And, you know, kind of side note, soapbox, you know, Christian circles, everybody's like, God doesn't want you to be happy. God wants you to be holy. And soapbox, the only reason people have that conversation is because both of those words share the letter H. That is literally the only reason we have that conversation. Does God want you to be happy or holy? It's because they both share the letter H. Okay. Like where does that even come from? Is that a
biblical conversation? They both end in Y.
Huh? What's that?
They both end in Y.
They both end in Y. I didn't think about that. Wow. You just took that to a whole nother level for me. But it's like, you know, both, you know, he wants you to be happy. He wants you to be holy. Like, why are we talking about this? And, you know, he wants us to have joy. He obviously gave us that emotion. You know, we're all going to experience the full range of emotions. And so he didn't give us the possibility of joy to be like, don't experience it. I only want you to be holy. You agree?
Yes, I do. I'm looking up Psalm 90 because I am feeling like I'm paraphrasing the Bible poorly. And so it does say a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Okay. So I did not make that up. I was going to feel really bad if I made up stuff about the Bible and put that out into the world. But yes, I was listening to what you said. And I think you're exactly right. Like in the church, what is that about where we have to make everything real serious? You know, that's what it feels like, but real serious in a specific way. Like we can't lament. Like we're not going to get messy with our emotions, but like holiness. What do you think people mean by that when you think about people talking about being holy?
Well, I don't know if people are comfortable with being happy. Like they don't know what to do with it. They kind of feel guilty when they're happy, maybe. Like, should I be experiencing joy?
Am I out of God's will?
Yeah. Or maybe they've been in religious settings, not all religious settings. Some of the pastors I know are really happy people. They're really joyful people. You know, but maybe they've been in a religious setting where the overarching tone is just serious, serious. And like, is it okay to smile in here? You know, and, it's interesting. John Piper has a great article out there. It's called, The Happy God. And, he notes how in the New Testament, Paul describes God as the blessed and happy God. The idea that God's happy. So if he's happy, we can be as well.
So if we're trying to cultivate joy, like I know that you do that, like you're intentional about it. What does that look like?
Yeah, I would say, you know, a couple things come to mind. You know, I think everybody has a different recipe for joy, right?
I think so too.
Yeah. Yeah. What's yours? First off, what's yours? What's your recipe for joy?
I'm going to have to think. I have to think about that. I don't feel like it's something that I conjure up, but there are like, it's almost like a setting that I'm most likely to experience it. But then sometimes it just comes out of the blue when you're not expecting it to, you know? Because like this month, for instance, I'm doing a glimmer spotting thing on Instagram and Facebook. And I did that because February historically tends to be difficult for me. I don't know why. Not like full-blown depression, but just like it's been winter too long. I just feel blah, kind of like there's nothing good on the horizon.
Yeah.
Kids getting stir crazy, whatever.
Yeah.
So I heard a while back, I think I've even talked about this on the podcast before, that the opposite of a trigger is a glimmer. Mm. And glimmers are moments of joy, connection, beauty, or goodness. And they send a message to our nervous system that we are safe, like that everything's okay. So it's basically doing the opposite to our nervous system that a trigger would be doing. So I think about that and how, I mean, God set that up, right? And those are like, sometimes we can cultivate joy in that way. And sometimes they come unexpectedly and we may or may not be paying attention when they show up. So like keeping your eyes out for the glimmers, that is a really fun and neat practice. And so I've been trying to do that this month. So like being outside for me a lot of times, like nature is a big deal for me. And I especially like it when animals or birds show up unexpectedly, or like I'm in the garden, I'm probably going to be paying more attention to that sort of thing, or like hiking or out somewhere. I live where it's really pretty outside. And so when it's a nice day, like the sun, I feel a lot of joy about that. Yeah. And around other people, when I'm with safe people or like worshiping with other people, like I'm an extrovert, I love the feeling of being with other people and connected. And there is some kind of synergy that happens when you feel like either in worship or like sometimes in counseling relationships or other places where it feels like I'm right where God wants me to be in this moment. And this is beautiful. And I'm really glad I get to be here for it, you know, either because he's using me in that moment or like there's something really important happening. I experience it then sometimes with music. It just depends. What about for you?
Yeah, a lot of those same things that you just mentioned, you know, music, that was one of the first ones that came to mind for me is like, listen to happy music, you know? And we love, you know, Christian music. We go to a Christian music festival every year. Like Forrest Frank, for example, like his music is just so happy. It's kind of upbeat. You know, my kids like Christian rap.
Oh yeah. We went to a KB concert last year and it was awesome.
Yeah. If you walked in my house at 7 o'clock every morning, it sounds like a club, you know,
And on the way to school, it sounds like it in my SUV. So we're in the same place. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think play is really important as well. You know, Brené Brown, she says the thing about play is it has no purpose. And we need times where we don't have purpose. And that's kind of an interesting concept, you know, that like, hey, we're so purposeful and driven and, you know, task-oriented, individualistic Americans, right? And we're climbing that mountain. And she's like, well, play, because it doesn't have any purpose and you need that, you know?
You know, along that same line, like, I think as an adult woman in my 40s, I don't really think of it as play in the same way, but there's something about creativity, you know? Mm-hmm. That kind of does that same thing for me. And I think play and creativity sometimes join hands, you know? So like making something, trying something new, not everything that I try do I love, but you know, it is kind of like play. In fact, I heard, I don't know who posted this, but I saw somebody post that there are different kinds of play and each of us have different play languages. So like exploring is one kind of play. Building is one kind of play, you know, like, we all have different ways that we like to play. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. So. One thing that stood out to me recently, especially for guys, you know, is adventure. And I think for girls as well. But there's something about for guys pushing yourself like to this edge, like to this limit where, like kind of dangerous. And when guys do that, like when they choose adventure, oh my goodness, they just come alive and they're filled with joy and excitement. And my best friend and I, we jumped in the Linville River the other day. It was, there were icicles falling into it. Like at first I could barely step in it for a second. And then we eventually like completely submerged ourselves out there. And, you know, just being out there, like we were just screaming at the top of our lungs, like two little kids, you know, and it was plunging. So much fun, you know, so nature.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then they say what it increases your dopamine by like 800% for the rest of the day. So,
yeah, I believe that, you know, I have a husband and four boys and I think I agree with you. I think that that's a thing. But it's
Garrett's
interesting because
the port down right now while we do the podcast. So.
Well, I can hear them. Can you hear them?
Yeah, they're living on the edge up there.
Yeah. I was going to say it's kind of interesting because I have one that's a big risk taker. Like he wants to do everything, you know, and he can't really hear limits. Like that's boring to him. But then I have one that's very cautious, but even in his own way, he does that. But it's just in a different way, you know. Yeah. It'll be about like making something or like creating something with technology, but like he doesn't want to just stop at something little. Like he wants to go all the way, you know, if he's got an idea, he's got to see it through all the way. So yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to talk to you also about movement because you're big into movement. And I hear a lot of times you talking to people about like, get off the couch, and you even walk with clients around a lot. And I know that you do a lot of personal movement as well. So we could call it exercise. We could call it adventuring. I'm just calling it joyful movement. But how do you think moving our bodies affects us emotionally and mentally?
I'm trying to figure out how much to say about this. I had a recent counseling session. I was tempted to talk about where movement really just changed the whole deal. But I'm not going to do it.
Okay. But we'll know that it did. Okay.
It did. It certainly did. It changed the whole mood. I was reading an article and from Duke University, and they said people who exercise are less anxious and less depressed than people who don't. Period. People who exercise are less anxious and less depressed than people who don't.
Yeah.
There's not much to that, but it's just like facts.
You know, I haven't heard it phrased like that, but I have heard many times that exercising is the same as taking an SSRI, basically, for your brain. So kind of the same, right? It boosts all the brain chemicals.
Yeah. The paper I wrote in counseling school is called Sweating Anxiety. And the research I got into there, it said 25 to 30 minutes of cardio, 85% max heart rate, 3 to 5 times a week is comparable to an SSRI.
Yeah. See, okay. Thank you for being more specific. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, big thing.
I'm going to take it out of context. So I'm glad you put it into context. Thank you.
There you go. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So let me just break it down from the top. Okay. Here's a good soundbite for it. You can edit whatever we already set out. The soundbite is this: people who exercise are less anxious and less depressed than people who don't. I also wrote an article, you know, just kind of in terms of, you know, thoughts, right? So on mindfulness and biking, okay? So I'm a big mountain biker, road bike when I have to. If the trails are wet or if it's rained too much, you can't go mountain biking. So road biking's like Lance Armstrong, you know, you put your helmet on, your tights and whatever, and that's why I don't like to do it. But mountain biking's cool. They say, if you really want to think something through, go road biking, because it's kind of this monotonous you know, thing where you're just like pedaling and there's not much to it. You're going in straight lines. They say, if you want to get something off of your mind, go mountain biking, because it requires your full attention. It distracts you. Just today, I went out mountain biking after work, and I was like thinking about stuff, and I'm like, I don't want to be thinking about that. I'm done with work, and like, you know, I'm like, I need to ride faster. And so that's my rule. If I'm still thinking about like kind of heavy things in life, I ride faster, you know, and then I'm not thinking about that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'm adding joyful movement into it because I work primarily with women and exercise for women. And I'm sure it is for men too, but in a different way, can sometimes be like a discipline rather than a joy. Or like a to-do list or something like that. Or like, I've got to tone up. I've got to lose weight. I've got to blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I don't always tell people to go to the gym because I think if you're on a treadmill, I mean, it's better than nothing. That's fine. But if you're on a treadmill, I don't think our brains can derail the same way because there's like nothing happening around us, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But if you go outside like you're moving, there's like trees that are going by. There's like butterflies that you can see. There's like, you know, you never know what you're going to see. And your situation is changing. You can feel the sun on your face. And I think moving our bodies helps our brains derail. But I hear what you're saying, because sometimes if things are monotonous, it helps us continue to ruminate. So that requires more concentration.
Right. Yeah.
That's good.
I'm with you on that. I like that. Joyful movement. You know, yeah, some people love fitness. Some people love getting in shape. I'm like you, I'd rather be having fun while I'm doing it. So,
And you know, another thing is like a lot of people like to do stuff together. So like, I mean, walkings and hiking and stuff, but like a lot of people take group classes, and I think there's joy in that too, because you're doing something social. It's not just like yourself trying to drag it through 45 minutes or.
Yeah. I kind of mix it up. I'll do like a lot of like lifting and things like that, so that I can, like, cause I'm getting old, like, so that I can keep doing the joyful movement. So.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure that stuff out for myself. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Gotta love our bodies as they age. That's right.
That's it, man. I'm getting high mileage over here. So.
Do you have a favorite book or podcast that you've been into lately or that you would recommend?
Yeah, I've been listening to this podcast. It's called Pause, Renew, Next. Solid.
This week you listened to this, right?
Solid. I did. I listened to it. There's a good one on rupture and repair and, you know, within ourselves. So that was good. That was good. So, you know, other ones, I like the Wild at Heart podcast by Owen. That one's really good.
And I've heard you talk about his books as well that you've read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the Get Your Life Back book that he has. Everyday Practices for a World Gone Mad. It a lot of what he has in there, it's like spiritual disciplines that you didn't really think about, or they're you know, spiritual disciplines that fit the hour.
That's right. So, I have read that too. Actually, I listened to it, I think, on audio. And he wrote that like right before the COVID, I think, right? But it seemed to really, really fit what was going on in the world.
Yeah.
And like everybody feeling burned out and needing to recharge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about John Eldridge. I don't think we said that. John Eldridge is the author. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like some of his practices, like the 1 minute pause. Okay. I can do a 1 minute pause. So many times the advice, you know, we're given is like, take a day away to pray. And it's like, then everything else would fall apart. It's like, well, I could do 1 minute, you know, a few times throughout the day and try to, you know, work that into my routine to, you know, reconnect with God and calm myself down. You know, but I don't have like a whole day all the time, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah, and he wrote a second one too. What's the second one called? I'm trying to remember. I don't think I finished that one.
Resilient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I've heard him talk about that, and I think it sounds beautiful. It also sounds like something you do when you're retired. I think it's a little harder for us with lots of kids and jobs and stuff like that to be able to go do that sort of thing, but
yeah,
maybe in the future. But we do what we can now, right? That's why we have a Sabbath day. So
that's right. That's right. I like John Mark Comer's The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. He is following Ortberg's Soul Keeping, okay, which says exactly the same thing, which is following Willard, who came up with the idea of the ruthless elimination of hurry. I feel like even though all of them have said that, somebody else needs to write a book about the same thing and get it out again, because nobody's getting the point.
That's right. Yeah, it's this technology thing, I think.
It is, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's always around.
Yeah, though I think our culture just like sucks us into, you know, full speed ahead on so many different things. So,
I agree. So let me ask you, are there any resources that you recommend as a marriage counselor that you tend to tell people about a lot or that you love?
I would say like read the Bible. it's really good.
Correct. I agree.
I can give, I'm kidding about that, and yet I'm not. And I do have some other, resources as well. But, one of the things, and you asked this question too, like, is there a verse, that stands out? And that Ephesians 4:32 says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ forgave you. If, I could encourage couples who are struggling to tattoo anything on their arms, like that one, or to memorize, or man, it's so hard to be kind and compassionate and forgiving, and I love the Gottman resources because, scripture tells us what to do. One thing, and I think this was part of my transition from pastoral ministry to counseling. One thing I'm really passionate about is how. And I think that's where counseling comes in and helps out. It's like, okay, be kind and compassionate to one another. Well, how? I'm psychologically flooded. I'm so overwhelmed. I'm angry. I'm using 25% of my brain right now. And the only thing I can come up with is words you don't want to hear. Okay.
That's right.
How can I be kind and compassionate? Take some breaths, pause the conversation, use progressive muscle relaxation, calm yourself down, and then resume the conversation.
That's good. Yeah. I was going to say, I agree with the Bible 100%. Like, I laughed because it seemed funny, but I'm not really laughing. Like, that is a really good answer. I will say though, when it comes to marriage counseling, I feel like there are some passages that get taken out of context. So I would say when it comes to the Bible, and particularly around marriage, read all of it.
Read the whole thing.
Not just particular parts that you would like to use.
That is it. Yeah. The one another passages in the Bible.
Yeah.
Are gold. So, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. For sure. Josh, is there anything else you wanted to talk about that I didn't give you a chance to?
Yeah. I would just say... So one thing that, kind of ties joy and marriage together that, stands out to me is this idea of enjoyment. Okay. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17, it says, he has given us all things to enjoy. He has given us all things to enjoy. And one thing I'm finding with people is that not too many people are really enjoying life these days or savoring it. We just kind of blaze through our meals or, rush through our drive or, we relate to our spouses, but we don't give them this sense that like, man, I just like being around you. It's hard at, this phase of life, I think, with kids running this direction and that direction. I chose or kind of felt God impressing upon me this idea of enjoyment this year, kind of as a word for the year. And thinking about marriage, thinking about life, I really want everybody around me to feel enjoyed by me. I think if people, who are trying to improve their relationships had this one goal of making the other person feel like you truly enjoy them, And putting some effort in, because sometimes, you know, I can be hard to enjoy. I have my rough edges. I'm sure there's times my wife's like, oh man, you know, has to fake it till she makes it, right? But you know, to give everybody around us the sense that I enjoy you the same way that God delights in us, but also just taking time to do that as well and not blazing through life and missing so much. So anyhow, choosing to enjoy people, choosing to enjoy life, it takes intentional effort these days. And if we're not careful, we won't enjoy it and we'll just waste it.
And that takes us back to joy, because enjoyment has the word joy in it. That's right.
That's right.
And you use the word delight. And as you were talking, that's the word that kept coming to my mind, because I interviewed an attachment researcher a couple years ago. And one of the six components that he saw in attachment, healthy attachment, is being delighted in. So that's really what you're talking about. Like, we all need that. We all need to feel delighted in, or like enjoyed. We could say it either way, right?
Yeah.
And you said that, like, God takes delight in us.
He does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good word.
If he takes delight in me and I want to be like him, then I need to model delighting in those around me.
That's good. I'm glad you said that. Thank you. Well, Josh, thank you for being on the podcast. It was really fun to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And, you know, great podcast. I'm excited for some of my friends and family to find out more about you and about this and how helpful it is. So thanks, Jenny.
Thanks again, Josh, for being on today's podcast episode. It was really fun to talk to you, and this conversation was an encouragement to me. I'm sure it was for our listeners as well. Friends, I hope that you're leaving this conversation thinking about joy, about cultivating joy, about the enjoyment of others, and about what your own joyful movement might look like. Well, friends, I'd love it if you did me a favor. If you enjoy this podcast, would you pass it on to a friend or family member, or online, so that more people will know about this podcast? You know, it's really hard to pass on podcasts. It's really hard to advertise them or tell new people about them. You can always go on and give a good review on iTunes or Spotify as well. That would certainly help. But my favorite is word of mouth. Well, that's all for today's podcast episode. I'm Jenny Detweiler with PRN. Pause, renew, next. May you be encouraged on your journey with Jesus.